wrestling, probably like fourth or fifth grade. So my when it came to the K through 12 system, like it was nothing but miseducation, bad experiences, super negative, you know? So I ended up just having my values more and more distorted. The more I'd go on, the more I'm getting older, running with my older cousins. I'm stealing from stores, conning people out of money, doing all kinds of things. And eventually I ended up dropping out for good. And when I did that, my values were so far gone that I heard about this widespread bank fraud scheme going on in the area. And I jumped right in on that. You know, I had what I thought was a good run. I thought I was successful. Now I'm driving nice cars. I have clothes. I have shoes. You know, the things that people who grew up poor like me never really had and always wanted. But, you know, little did I know, this was not a path to success. It was a path to destruction. So one day I found out that I had a warrant for my arrest, and this warrant was for 30 felonies all at one time. You know,
That'll wake you up.
Yeah. First time ever in jail. I ended up sitting in the Pierce County Jail for 8.5 months after that, being told that I'm looking at decades in prison for leading organized crime. And I knew I didn't want to go back to a life of crime. I ended up blessed where I ended up with a 36-month sentence, or 20 months on the 36 months. And when I got out, I knew I didn't want to go back to crime. So,
but you had barely an education at this point. Is that what you're saying?
At this point, I probably had, I'd say, I had up in eighth grade education, but I had lucked into a GED. Somehow I went to Tacoma Community College to take the test to get my GED, and I passed it. I have no idea how, but that opened the door for some things that I ended up doing later on. You know, when I got out, education wasn't really on my radar, so I got a job at the Old Country Buffet. You know, like that's what people do when they're not committing crimes. They're not going to prison. They're going to work. So at 23 years old with no work experience, a GED and 30 felonies on your record as a black man, you know, like what were my job prospects? I didn't have the Old Country Buffet was all I was able to get. It was minimum wage. And it took about 3 days for me to realize this is not the life that I'm signing up for. So if miseducation in my K through 12 experience, the upbringing from negative role models and things like that helped take me down this path where I ended up in prison, then I figured that education might be a way for me to climb out. If I don't want to do the things that the successful people in society don't want to do, if I don't want to be part of a permanent underclass, then maybe I can go become educated and then I'll qualify for something that's a little more elevated. I don't have to be at the bottom of the barrel, you know, which is what I felt when I was at the Old Country Buffet. I felt like I was signing up for a life of misery, you know.
You didn't have a role model, an inspiration, a mentor that said, hey, Omari, just get educated. You just sort of knew enough or you figured it out on your own that said, this isn't good enough.
Yeah, there was no one pushing me that direction at all, but I knew that I had limited options. You know, it was either work for what you're qualified for right now, which is this minimum wage to me was degrading, or you got to find something to elevate yourself.
Because you'd seen enough of street life to know there was a limit.
Yeah, for sure. And I actually tried going to college before. I got my GED before going to prison. My best friend was actually a really good basketball player. He was in the NBA draft, and he didn't end up getting picked, but he went to a junior college in Kansas and told them that he would go there if they let me come with them. You know,
that's and a good friend.
I ended up going with them, though, and a lot of the promises that were made, like my classes being paid for, my dorm. In Kansas, the junior colleges actually have dorms and things like that, you know. So we were staying in a dorm. It's super expensive. They said it would be taken care of, but by October, I had to come back home. You know, it didn't work out. My stuff was not taken care of, and I went right back to hustling, committing crimes. And it wasn't long after that when I'm riding on the freeway and my car gets shot up, you know. So I could have been in college changing my life, but instead I came right back to that negative lifestyle, negative environment. But after, you know, after the Old Country Buffet, I decided, look, I'm going to go ahead and go to college. So I enrolled at Pierce College in Lakewood, Washington. I didn't know what my prospects were. Like, what can you really do? I have 30 felonies on my record, you know? So I figured, look, I come from a background of disadvantage, and a lot of that had to do with addiction. A lot of that had to do with alcoholism on my dad's part. So maybe I can be a drug and alcohol counselor and make sure that other kids don't have to go through the things that I went through, you know? So I ended up enrolling to be a CDP. It's called a chemical dependency professional. My degree was human services substance abuse. But when I look to my left and my right, I see classmates who are already working in the field, getting their trainee hours so they can become a CDP. And me, I'm scared of background checks. I have 30 felonies. I'm thinking the state is not going to allow me to work in this field. So I never filled out the application to get the license to even be a trainee.
Hmm.
So I ended up earning my degree, though. I graduated from Pierce College. I had a decent enough GPA to qualify for what's called a direct transfer agreement, where the University of Washington Tacoma pretty much had to accept me based on the fact that I earned this degree, had the direct transfer agreement, and I qualified on GPA. And then once you get to the University of Washington, they have what's called the Husky Promise, where if you qualify for the Pell Grant or State Need Grant, your tuition's guaranteed. So that went from, you know, I never thought getting out of prison, I'd end up at the University of Washington one day, but going to Pierce College and just taking these little minor successes and, you know, being proud of myself, recognizing that I do belong and that I can do this, it allowed me to get to where I never thought that I could go. So when I got to the University of Washington Tacoma, I started working on campus, first in the advancement office and then in events and conference services. I ended up working in financial aid. And this has given me like my first experience as like, look, I actually can get up and go to work every day. You know, I wasn't getting paid a lot more than the Old Country Buffet. It was a minimum wage student job pretty much, but it didn't feel degrading. It felt like I was building towards something. And it was just the fact that I was a student that qualified me to work there. It wasn't, we need to do a bunch of background checks on you. We need to put you through this rigorous cycle and make sure that you're qualified. I was like, no, you're a student here. You have work study. You came, you interviewed, you did a good job. We're going to give you the position. So that was a major confidence boost. Just being
Felt like you belonged somewhere. This is legit for me to be here.
For sure. And my life, just the lifestyle change, when you go from hustling every day, running the streets, chasing a dollar to now.
Like you're trying to avoid people and getting caught at things. Now you're part of something.
Yeah, and I'm going to class and I'm doing my schoolwork and, you know, I'm going to work afterwards on this same campus and people are recognizing, like, I can tell that I was of value. I'm actually able to sit at the financial aid front desk and use my own experiences to help the people in front of me. Like, I just filled out the FAFSA. I just went through all this. You know, I'm learning a lot of things. So I'm able to help students. And it really boosted my self-esteem. It boosted my self-worth and told me, look, I'm not just some imposter. You know, I'm not that dropout that I was a long time ago. That guy's gone now. You know, I'm growing. I'm developing. And I'm a positive, productive member of society now.
That's pretty cool. At what point, then, did you turn all of this experience around and help those other people who went through that same kind of background and upbringing you did, and to teach them, hey, you can get out of this cycle and get into the classroom after you've been in prison and there is a future for you, right? I mean, people are reentering society. One thing people don't stop and think about, people in prison and jail, almost all of them are coming out at some point. So we want them to enter society and reenter with success.
Definitely. So for me, it didn't, like, when I was going to college, when I was working on my bachelor's degree, I didn't know that I'd end up doing what I'm doing right now. You know, like, it wasn't like I made a plan and I just followed it and ended up there. I actually graduated with my bachelor's degree still not knowing what I wanted to do with my life.
Like most of us.
Yeah. So I ended up going into grad school. I wanted to get my master's in social work to work with disadvantaged youth. But when I inquired about enrolling, they said, with your background, with those 30 felonies, you're not going to be able to do the internships. You can't get a master's in social work. So that led me to getting my master's in interdisciplinary studies. My initial research focus was going to be the educational impacts for kids served by low-income public housing. And I ended up making this shift to where I went away from that and decided I was going to design a prison-to-college workshop. So I used a research method called autoethnography, where I was looking at my experiences, how I transitioned, released from prison, and used education to pretty much elevate myself in life. And I used those experiences to design a curriculum and a workbook for a workshop to help other people make this transition. And after that, that's when I started speaking about my story and, you know, being a lot more open. I started writing my book. And by the time I graduated, you know, people were taking notice of that. So I had signed a contract with Tacoma Community College to offer this workshop. Nobody had showed up. You know, we had a reporter to write a story on it, and it was just, it was ugly. But I wasn't discouraged. You know, I was like, I'm going to keep pushing. And shortly after that, I ended up being hired by South Seattle College as a faculty member and a case manager, where I was at the Kent and Berrien DOC office teaching life skills and helping people releasing from prison navigate housing and employment and, you know, just different opportunities to make a successful transition from prison back into, you know, being a productive member of society.
So you developed a workshop for that and hired by the Department of Corrections to help people. Is there not already in place a method for release? I mean, are people not taught how they can fit into society once they're released and ready to reenter? Is that something that's sorely lacking?
So I hear about, you know, some people coming up with reentry plans and working with DOC staff to do that, but I don't believe that it happens enough. And, you know, sometimes you just, if your only contact with this person was in the inside, sitting across from the desk, you came up with the plan, there's no support to actually execute. So now there are something, like if you look at various community colleges in the area, there's what's called a reentry navigator. You know, so they've placed people on college campuses that their job is to work specifically with people who are releasing from the prison system, helping them navigate those opportunities, you know. And South Seattle College has a lot going on. You know, when I released in Tacoma, I didn't hear of any organizations helping people with reentry, but now there's a ton of them.
That's,
you know,
good.
With different services and
what are
things
the,
like that.
What are the topics and the key points you make to people and about education specifically?
So for me, the main thing is introducing new possibilities. It's breaking down those negative thoughts that, look, there's nothing out there for me in society. You know, I could have stopped at that associate's degree level and been like, look, this is the highest level I can reach. I actually didn't even have to go to college. You know, I could have thought college wasn't for me. Yeah. But when you hear more stories of people who are able to get out and be successful in that, then you can see the possibility for yourself. So Humanities Washington has allowed me to go into Green Hill, you know, which is a youth prison here in the state. It's allowed me to go to Washington Correction Center and spread this message that, look, there's people out here who were once exactly where you were, and they're using education as a way to create opportunity for themselves, as a way to change their lifestyle and make sure that they never go back to incarceration.
That's awesome. We are speaking this morning with Omari Amili about Crime to the Classroom. You can learn more about Omari on his website. And let me give that out. It's just his name. It's omariamili.com. And that is, let me spell it out for you. His name's a little bit different. O-M-A-R-I-A-M-I-L-I, omariamili.com. We're talking about re-educating those leaving prison. And Omari is a speaker with Humanities Washington. He's written a book. It's called Transforming Society's Failure. He speaks all the time. Sounds like you're an inspirational guy. How long does it take to get that message through to people? I mean, just like you said, a lot of people leaving prison probably have this mindset, you know, I'm going back. Mm-hmm. Anyway, at one point, there's a dead end for me. And because that seems like the biggest, maybe one of the biggest hurdles to get over, someone's internal perception of, okay, I'm done for a while, or that's it, I've gone as far as I can go.
Mm-hmm.
What are those, where's that inspiration? I mean, how do you get people over that hump?
You know, one is just sharing the good news about different things that go on out here. You know, the fact that there's a lot of different legislation, you know, that serves our population, people releasing from prison, whether it's people trying to ban the box with employment applications or with housing applications, or, you know, just decrease the discrimination based on, look, this person has, if you print a piece of paper and it shows their background, it's going to show convictions, but it's not going to show you who this person is, you know. So being able to go inside and tell them, look, there's a shifting narrative. There's people out here who are releasing from prison, graduating from law school, becoming attorneys with the support of the Supreme Court and a lot of, you know, major people, you know, like, so when you can share these success stories and let them know, look, this person came from the bottom where you were and they are now here, then it opens up their mind to, like, look, maybe I can do this too. Especially, like, if there's someone who knew you from the past, like, there's a lot of people who I know from my past who, They saw where I was. They saw the fact that I was never going to school when I was a kid. If they knew me as a kid, you know, they knew that I was in prison. They knew I was in car. So it's not like this is somebody with no credibility telling you this. So
yeah, because you came from the same, I don't know, South Hill, right, neighborhood.
I went to over 15 different schools growing up, from Seattle, Tacoma, Portland, Vancouver. When I was born, I lived probably mostly in the Central District, and I've actually probably been in the Tacoma area just as long as I've been in Seattle now, but I live in Spanaway. I didn't grow up out there. I moved. That was all post prison when I ended up in Spanaway and South Hill.
So, how about is it accessible? I mean, what do you need to teach them that, or show them how to navigate? Is that a word you use?
For sure.
Prison navigator or something. What's accessible? What's open? What are the avenues to get that education? Are there financial burdens and other things like having that box to check off that make it hard? That you say, look, do it this way. It's possible. There's money here. Are there grants? I mean, is the state making things? counties, and I don't know, what's out there?
Yeah, there's a common misperception that people who have criminal history won't qualify for financial aid, but that it's a misperception. Like, you do qualify for financial aid. There used to be a rule where if you were receiving financial aid and you were arrested for a drug offense at the time, then you wouldn't qualify, but that's a very small amount of people, you know, so you can... It doesn't even really matter what your conviction was for. You can fill out the FAFSA, which is the free application for federal student aid, and, you know, you'll qualify for, if you're low income, for Pell Grant, state need, things like that. There's also student loan. Like, for me, my education was not free at all. I did get some grants that didn't have to be repaid, but I owe over $150,000 right now, you know. But would I rather have $150,000 debt and a master's degree, or would I rather have no debt and be pretty much unemployable, you know?
Because you still feel like you have a future. You have so much potential in front of you with that education.
For sure. Something still needs to be done about the debt, because I didn't know what I was getting myself into. But I would definitely choose this over the alternative, which was to not be educated, to not have the opportunities that I have today.
Yeah. Wow. And you talked about, I don't know, was it drug offenses? This state now has... marijuana decriminalized. I mean, it's recreational. It's legal.
For sure.
But weren't there thousands and I don't know how many tens of thousands of people in prison for, you know, drug offenses that now is not a crime? And those people, there's something on their record, or, you know, that's preventing them, or they think preventing them from a future. Is that the case?
Yeah, there are definitely people who have been incarcerated, you know, financially destroyed, had their background destroyed, you know, over something that people are now making millions of dollars of, you know, and they come from a different demographic. These opportunities would have never been available to the same people, though, you know, as far as like getting a lot. Once you have these criminal histories, it's hard to even get into certain industries. So it definitely is it's showing a shifting society, but at the same time, there's a lot of collateral consequences, a lot that, you know, when you have this record on your background, there are a lot of things that are no longer available to you, like constitutional rights, for example, rights to, you know, be able to just rent a place to live or go volunteer at your kid's school and things like that. You know, it's like I hear some of my friends talk all the time about how they cannot go volunteer at their kid's school. But here I am. I chaperone field trips. I've been in the classroom going to AR parties. Like, why is it that I'm able to do this, but the next person's not? You know, we need things to be equitable. We need people to not be judged just off of this one blemish in their past. And the juvenile, I worked for the ACLU of Washington as a juvenile justice researcher. And the way that this system is eating up these children is, to me, even worse than what's happening in the adult system.
You know, the phrase, the school to prison pipeline is sort of, I don't know, not, I mean, it's a phrase and people can kind of use it as a catch-all phrase. But what do you have anything to say about that, and that it really are some systematic things or systemic things built into parts of our society that's real, isn't it?
Yeah, part of my job with the ACLU of Washington was like to go in and do court observations. So I'll just sit in the courtroom and just watch what different types of things kids were in there for. You know, there's this thing called a status offense, which is the kid didn't commit a crime. It's not something you could arrest an adult for, but they might have had an issue with truancy, or they might have had an issue with, you know, just some type of stipulation that was placed on them, but it's not a crime, but they're being referred to the criminal justice system. So they're now missing school. They're incarcerated. There are a lot of people who, young kids who get in trouble at school, and the school, they call them resource officers, but they're police officers on campus are the ones who are dealing with it. You know, they're like, when you introduce police interaction into a young person's life, especially if they're black or brown, you're like setting the stage for their future. This is what I can expect going forward. You know, I'm being prepared for the fact that I'm going to be removed from everyone else, and I'm going to have this interaction with the law. And some of them are actually being arrested on the spot from school and brought to juvenile detention, you know. And sometimes, you know, you can understand it, you know. But other times it's like, no way should that be taking place.
But, I mean, so in this, I guess the research is showing that those kind of offenses that are the same kind of offenses that other people outside of schools get away with all the time, or get their hands slapped. Okay, just, you know, it's a ticket or something, or just don't do it anymore. But if it's a kid, like you said, especially of color, they get yanked and they're in a system already.
For sure.
And the way the teachers, like you said, you were taught that the teachers in the schools was kind of an adversary, not your helper.
For sure. I never really saw them as my allies, because there was no one asking, like, you know, what's going on? Is there any way I can help you or things like that? It's more like just looking at your behavior, labeling you a bad apple, and then like that reputation just follows you. You know, like I said, that situation with Bailey Gatzert and the son, this was the one. I'm dirt poor, living in the projects, parents in addiction. This was the best part of my life, the fact that I could escape and go to the Sonics game.
Yeah.
And my school decided I'm going to call and try to put an end to that. You know, like that, it's just unfathomable. You know, the schools, like, that should be your safe haven. If you're at home being abused, neglected, abandoned, not being fed right, or just anything going on at home that is an adverse experience, you should be able to come to school and find help.
Yeah.
You should be able to come to school and find counselors who are able to not punish your parents, but like, they need help as well. You know, addiction, these are systemic issues. These are not bad people. These are people who have a problem that needs to be addressed. And it doesn't need to be addressed through incarceration. It doesn't need to be addressed through putting a blemish on their record, making them part of a permanent underclass.
We have been talking this morning with Omari Amili. You can learn more about his story and what he does and how you might hear him speak for the Humanities Washington. OmariAmili.com, right? People can just look up your website. It's chock full of stuff and information about
calendar.
You. Yeah, OmariAmili.com. We got a couple minutes left, Omari. Is there something maybe we've left out of the conference? There's tons, actually. I know, because you have a big story to tell. But something maybe you want the people to come away with today, or maybe something you want to say twice about either education or the future people can have through education, or I don't know, any topic we left off, or anything you want to hit twice.
Yeah, so people like me, you know, who wrote a book, I do public speaking, you know, like, I'm going to be on the radio through this platform. Like, they hear my story and they think, like, it's an exception, or this is like someone who is just completely defying all expectations for this certain population. However, the more and more you get out there, the more and more you can meet people who are similar to me. I'm part of a network called the Formerly Incarcerated College Graduates Network. There's 1,000 people in, I believe, 43 states. This includes people who have released from prison, like Tara Simmons here in the state of Washington. She graduated with prestigious fellowships and all that from law school. They told her she can't sit for the bar exam. She had to appeal to the Supreme Court, and they unanimously ruled in her favor that same day. Like, you can sit for the bar exam. And then she killed the bar, and she's now a practicing attorney here in the state of Washington.
But that's awesome.
She has a history of incarceration. Also, there's other people here, like UW professors, you know, who came from out of state, but they had that history of incarceration. Now they're actually the founder of the Formerly Incarcerated College Graduates Network is a University of Washington professor. There's scientists. There's just people who are breaking down every type of stereotype, every type of assumption, every type of negative label. They're just defying all the preconceived notions that people. We did an event just this past Saturday at the Washington State History Museum. There was about 6 formerly incarcerated people there, and also the head of the Department of Corrections. And afterwards, a man approached me. He said, look, I used to look at people who were in prison as second-class citizens. I used to believe that they were not worthy of anything. They were like the scum of the earth. And he said, by listening to you guys here tonight, my mind was changed, you know? And it was like, this can't happen from just hearing from an individual and thinking that this person is an exception. It takes for you to recognize there's a lot of us. There are some people who are not in a privileged enough position to share their story because they might lose their job. They might lose the place that they live. I know people who have went into computer science, into business administration, and, you know, it's not as safe as when you're working with formerly incarcerated people to speak about your experiences. So we need to be able to release from prison and come back to a welcoming society.
Yeah.
The best thing possible is for us not to commit crime again. And the best way to do that, provide opportunity and resources.
That's awesome. It's all positive, what you're talking about. And, there's the future sounds like it's got plenty of up to it. Thank
Definitely.
You. Thank you, Omari, so much for being here. We have been talking with Omari Amili this morning. If you'd like to see Omari give one of his workshops or talks, you can either go to his own website, OmariAmili.com. I'll spell it again, OmariAmili, OmariAmili.com, or the Humanities Washington website. That's humanities.org, right? Hey, thank you so much for being here this morning. I really appreciate the time, and a bigger thanks for what you're doing for those leaving the prison system. It just sounds awesome, Omari.
Yeah.
And folks, if you'd like to hear this interview again, it'll be available on podcast1.com and iTunes within a few days. Just search Spotlight with Gary Shipe. I am Gary Shipe. Thanks for listening today. We hope you've learned something new. Join us again next week as we continue to talk with people that are making a difference in our community.